One of the wonderful and terrible things about ministry is getting to preach about things where you have skin in the game, where it truly, deeply matters to your life. And this is one of those topics. When I got up this morning, I had to decide how I wanted to dress for this service. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to dress the way I dress when I go out. Because I am a transgender person, I am genderqueer, and when I go out for a formal evening, I don't do it in a dress. I do it in a suit and tie. And then I thought about, what about that tie? I have a selection of lovely ones. I almost wore the Mickey Mouse one today. But when I went to get that out, I thought, you know what? I'm putting on the white collar, because so many people have been wounded so deeply by people who dared to take a pulpit and say to the people in front of them, you're going to hell for being who you are. You're not enough. You're doing it wrong. And you know what? They don't get to do that. So I'm going to stand up here wearing this collar, which I normally do not wear, and say, no, it doesn't work that way. But I have skin in the game on this one. My friend Sharon Welsh says that religion is about transformative experience. One of the tough things about gender and gender identity and sex is that we all get it wrong. And we're going to keep getting it wrong because we don't know what right is yet. It's a subject that makes a lot of people nervous. You don't want to say to somebody, excuse me, which genitals do you have so I know what to call you? That's a little uncomfy. And most of us do get a little hostile if asked, let me tell you. So today we're just going to talk about it. And I'm going to try to give you some information. And I'm going to say, I'm always open for questions. You won't hurt my feelings. I'm not going to get mad. And it's okay to mess it up. I'll tell you what you messed up so you don't do it out there somewhere and get punched in the eye. Ask the questions. We'll deal with it together. It's okay. Years ago, I met a friend. It was a new friend. My buddy Larry is a journalist, and he introduced me to his partner. Now, Larry was born in 1910, and his partner, who I'm going to call David, that is not his real name. They are both dead now. But his partner David was born in 1916. At the time, they were in their 70s. And Larry invited me over for dinner for the first time. And I walked into the house, and David met me joyfully at the door. He was so excited to meet Larry's friend. And I was a young, punky kid. My hair's dyed all kinds of colors. I was an interesting little ball of wax. And David meets me at the door, and what I saw was this incredibly tall man towered over me. This incredibly heavy, dark beard and these long fingers and big hands and big ears and a big nose and big feet. And he said, hi, in this beautiful, high, lovely, feminine voice. And we sat and we had tea, and I watched him handle the teacups. And he talked about finding this tea set and how much he adored it. And it was a beautiful set. He rested his cup on a doily, and he was talking to me about learning to tat. It was beautiful. And all I could think at the time was, oh, you're the cutest little old lady. Except he wasn't. He was a 6'5" bearded man. He liked to do china and glass painting, and he collected beautiful, elaborate Victorian china dolls. Loved pink. Anything sparkly. When you met David, he read as not only a gay man, but like there should be flames coming from him. And, you know, Larry is, his partner was very butch, very macho. And they were just wonderful together. They had been together for 40 years at that point. And eventually, though, I learned David's story. When he was born in 1916, you didn't get to have indeterminate genitalia. You didn't get to be born and have somebody go, well, hell if I know. So he was born, and the doctor looked and said, wow, I'm not really sure. And brought the baby in to mom and dad and pointed out the differences and the vagaries and said, I don't know. What do you say, Dad? And what do you think Dad said? By God, it's a boy that looks like a penis to me. And so David said when he was in what we would call elementary school now, even though back then it was a one room that he was in, he thought he had cancer. He went in and he had surgery because his parents told him, you know, we're going to remove some tumors. In the early 80s, at the beginnings of when we first began to do more DNA work, David went in and had preliminary DNA testing for the first time in his life. David's a girl. David's a woman, 100%. They had given him growth hormone and hormones when he was a teenager because, of course, he wasn't developing right. So he shot up to be 6'5". Couldn't fix the voice. He has no Adam's apple. No matter what they did, they couldn't make it lower. He got teased all through high school. The other boys assumed he was a deformed boy with micropenis. He wasn't. He's a woman. And he said to me the day he told me about this, he said, you know what? I had to sue to get my medical records from the doctor who did the cancer surgery. He said, I didn't have cancer surgery. I had a hysterectomy. He said, I could have had a baby. I'm a girl. And his partner, Larry, said something that stuck with me all these years. Larry said, well, you know, we've been together 40 years. I don't care what you are. You're you. He said, but you know, he said, we've never been able to decide. Are we gay or straight? And I thought about it for a minute and I said, I have no idea. I have no idea. He said, neither do we, and we're us. So, it is this complex. You're going to get it wrong. I'm going to get it wrong. Don't kick yourself when you do, because some of us don't know what to say about this stuff. Sex is the biological side, but it's tangled up through gender roles, and through gender identity. And what we're doing today is parsing this out just a little bit. Sex is both real and a social construct. It's an and. What do I mean by real? I mean body bits are real. Testes are a thing. They exist. You don't have to believe in a table. It's still a table. Testes are testes. Ovaries are ovaries. They exist. Some people have uterus. Some people can grow a baby. The prostate gland is not an urban legend, and shockingly, the clitoris is not a myth. These are real pieces. They exist no matter how we understand or identify or categorize them. But, and this is a huge, huge but, the way we've decided to divide up sex, physical sex, into only two categories. And the things that we have decided are the male and female identifiers, this is a social construct. It's based on religion, outward physical appearance, accepted convention, and medical information. And I know that's tricky. It really is. Somewhere we decided that everybody with a penis was a boy, and everybody with a vagina was a girl. And we said that's an identifier. That doesn't make it true because we've said it. It just means that that's how we're filing things in our filing system. And one of the things I want you to think about is, when does it matter which of those identifiers you have? And the answer is, it doesn't. It only matters through that lens of both religion and medicine. Your doctor cares which body bitch you have. That's important. Between you and the doctor, keeping track of which set you have of organs. But do I need to know which set of organs you have? Why should that matter in terms of your job or your life or who you can marry or who you can adopt or what toys you play with? Dr. Alice Dreger writes, yes, most men have recognizable penises and scrotums and testes, and most women have recognizable clitoris and labia and vagina, but some people have versions of these organs that are in between. And most people have either XX or XY chromosomes, but some people have the opposite of what you would guess from the way they look. Some people have combinations like XXY or XO or XXXY. Nature doesn't care that we like solid categories. The real world is messy. So for any given child, Dr. Dreger writes, we can't predict what gender identity or sexual orientation that person will grow up with, even if they are raised in a strict gender role culture. You can raise an Amish child and tell them what Amish manhood looks like, and they can have a penis, and they can still end up transgender. So can you decide, can someone decide what ultimately makes someone male or female or other? Sure. Just like David's family did. Whammo, you're a boy. You can do that. The courts have done that. In Texas, they've decided if you have a Y chromosome, you have to count as male. And you have to not have a Y to count as female. 49 of our states, if you are born with indeterminate genitalia, will say to you, we don't care. Pick one. That's a social need. That's not real. That isn't something we have to do. What we have to do is identify which organs you have so you can get good medical treatment. We don't have to assign a name to that cluster of organs. People will always want anatomical categories neat. But I love Alice Dreger, who says, in nature, nature is a slob. We are an odd pairing that way. We get that body bits matter to the doc, but we don't get that the categories are simply tools. They create a form of identification and a form of control. They helped us decide historically who could inherit money or land. They helped to establish dynasties in Japan. They helped to try to identify who can have babies. They're filing systems. But they may not be true because of gender. So if sex is the biological piece, if you are male or female because of the bits you have, gender is two things, the gender role and the personal gender identity. And again, all of these may not match any pattern you expect them to. So gender roles are the ways society tells us, here's how you be male. Here's the performative piece. If I've got on a suit like this, I must be a boy because I'm performing maleness. And if I've got on a dress and I'm asking the person in a suit to drive my car, I must be female because I'm performing femaleness. And if you think about it, a large part of our gender roles are performative. When I go out wearing a suit with my hair like this, not wearing makeup, I inevitably get called sir. I have a deep voice. I am tall enough. There is no hesitation to calling me sir. I have never been stopped walking into a men's bathroom. But all I have to do is trade my messenger bag for a purse and put on eyeliner. I can still be wearing the suit. I can be at the same event where someone just called me sir and go in the bathroom and put on eyeliner and pick up a cute little purse and pull it out of my messenger bag and walk up to the same person and they will say, yes, ma'am, can I help you? It's all performative. We all know the conventions about what are boy things and what are girl things. Pink and blue and who does the housework and who does the yard work. How does this work? But they're all based somewhere. These are not totally made up. And here's the part people hate. For any of you who've had boys, I know in my house, if I gave them a stick, they will poke someone with it. If I give them a Pop-Tart, they will bite it into a gun shape. And if I tell them, don't be violent, no shooting, they will throw it at one another. It's who they are, as people, no matter what I applied over that to try to help them not be as stereotypically gendered. My littlest siblings are 16 and 18. The 16-year-old, I have no idea what gender that child is, but I'm glad she's enjoying it. The 18-year-old is a pretty princess. She's happy being a pretty princess. She's also, I have no idea what her sexual orientation is, but she's happy with it. Some things are just innate, some things are cultural, some are genetic, and we don't know which is which. Because our idea of what sex is possibly broken. Because sometimes you get a girl who's a pretty princess who bites the same gun out of the Pop-Tart and throws it when you tell her to stop shooting. We got it wrong somewhere with what we think the system is. The other piece is gender identity. What do people feel they are? What do they innately know they are? If you would have asked my sister, are you a boy or a girl? She would have said, I'm a girl. What the hell's wrong with you? I know that here. One of the hardest things I ever had to do as a minister, though, is work with an 8-year-old child whose mother came to me in tears at another church and said to me, I need help, and I need it right now. You've met my child, who at the time had a particular name and a gender identity. And I said, yeah, of course. Saw that child the other day. And she said, my child came home the other day and said, Mama, can you help me with something? And I said, of course I can. Sure, what you need? And my child said, Mama, I'm a boy. I know I'm a boy. And I can't pretend to be a girl anymore. Now, this is an 8-year-old. I can't pretend to be a girl anymore. I am so ashamed. When I have to go out and you put me in a skirt, I'm a boy. Mama, can you get me help? Is there a doctor? Is there somebody? And here's the part that nearly took me out. This little person said to their mother, "And if you can't help me, can you help me kill myself? Because I'm too small and I'm afraid. But I can't live like this." And as a minister, I went, "Wah!" Tears running down my face. Because I knew this child, this sad little child that I'd seen for 2 years at that point. I said, "Yes, I can help, and I can help today. Can we go get your child right now?" And so we went and got this little person. And I said, "Thank you for telling your mom this. Your mom came to get me. Did you know I'm like you?" And this little kid went, "What? What? Really? Yeah." I said, "I am so glad to know you're a boy. I'm so glad you told us. And yes, there are all kinds of people that can help. I've got a list right here I'm giving to your mom right now." And this young man went, "Really? Can we really fix this?" I'm like, "Sure, honey. You told us you're a boy. Now we can fix. Your mom's got this handled." So when people say little people don't know, this young man knew who he was. He knew he was a boy. There was no ifs, no ands, no buts. And bless his heart, he got taken to the doctor. He got with a great set of adolescent transition specialists. And today he is a happy, healthy teenage boy, loving life, going through puberty. He's got his first girlfriend. He's great. He knew who he was. Just like most of you know who you are without a problem. And that is the marvelous point about that. That if allowed, we know who we are. And no matter how you get socialized, it's not possible to change who you know you are. And I'll tell you, my parents went to a lot of effort to get me those pink princess gowns. I got a news for you, it didn't take. I know who I am. But as we move through a world of shortcuts, it's easy to want to fall back into, "Just tell me the easy stuff. Just let me identify you as male or female so that I don't have to think about this." I've heard, "I can't memorize that many pronouns." Maybe you can't. Maybe you struggle. But if you can learn their name, you can learn their pronouns. And if you're not sure, use they. If we are indeed people who want other people to be their most authentic, who want to help people live into their potential, if we want to live into our potential, then we owe it to ourselves and to one another to grant one another a little more grace than our system provides. We owe it to one another to understand how each person understands their own identity and their own role, and to be a person of integrity and love. We owe it to the world to let people tell us who they are and to believe them. Even if they're nonconforming, even if they're performing gender in ways you have never heard of, it's okay. You'll get over it. They'll get over it. Let the mystery be. Let people do themselves. You do you. Honor that. So whether you're into snakes and snails and puppy dog tails or sugar and spice and everything nice, or maybe sugar and spice snakes, be yourself. Educate yourself so that you can journey with people and hold them safe, no matter how they identify. Because if we want our hearts to be in a holy place, we have to make a safe space for our own bodies and for bodies in the world around us. If all the world is really a stage and we are just players on it, then grant each and every player the grace to write their own role. And then darn well applaud wildly. Amen.